Welcome to the Everything ECU podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and joining me today is Sarah Scrivens, a thought leader in the world of education with over 15 years of experience. Sarah has served as an administrator, classroom teacher, mentor, and coach. And today, she's joining me to share great tips to help close the gaps brought on by COVID, as well as how to support children's social, emotional development and support them through connections. This is a fantastic episode with so many tips that we can take back to our programs starting today. Welcome to the show, Sarah. I am so excited that we are able to connect today and talk about everything ECE.
Thank you, Carla. I'm so excited to be here. This is absolutely my favorite topic. So I'm super excited to dive into everything positive guidance and discipline.
Yay! So before we do dive in, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So I have been an educator. I was an administrator for a pre-K located on a high school campus. So I taught high school students how to be teachers, and I did that for 5 years. Then I moved into a consulting role, which is what I do now. I absolutely love early childhood, everything to do with it. Preschool is my jam. And I love working with both young children and I love working with teachers. So right now I focus in on professional development for preschool teachers across the United States. And I absolutely love working with teachers, specifically in early childhood. I've also taught first grade. I've taught kindergarten. So I've taught in the elementary school setting as well. But my passion truly is developing oral language skills in children and creating that positive, loving environment for both teachers and for our little ones.
I love that. And I really find that we are making a more conscious shift in education towards that positive discipline. I think a lot of us who weren't necessarily raised with that positivity and nurturing discipline, we were raised like, this is how it is. You're a child. I'm an adult. I think we're starting to notice that even though we turned out fine, there's a better way to do it.
Absolutely. And that goes back to what you said. I grew up in a very loving, very warm environment, but my parents didn't really talk about feelings. And we kind of just said, we're happy, we'll move forward, and that's it. And right now I'm really focusing on with my three-year-old daughter specifically, giving her that emotional intelligence, giving her that language. So if she is feeling frustrated, have her use those words, frustrated, I'm feeling worried, I'm feeling anxious, and then explain to her why she's feeling like that. And then give her that language and then give her those coping skills. A lot of times we kind of blanket parent and we blanket discipline our kids, and our kids need to be individualized. They need that autonomy. We need to be teaching them those skills and those coping strategies. So today I hope to share with you some things that I've learned as a parent and things I've learned as an educator and things I've learned as a teacher. And it's ever changing, which is the best thing. But I think right now the focus is on social emotional learning because it's so crucial, especially for these little ones who have lived through COVID and us as educators who have lived through COVID. A lot of us have experienced trauma. So using trauma-based care in our preschools is going to be so helpful for both educators and for our students as well.
100%. And you've touched on so much already there. And my first question would be, do you feel that our preschoolers, kindergartens, like our little ones, but also our educators have kind of become stunted in their social emotional development, like even the adults?
Absolutely. I see that all the time. Right now I'm coaching on a campus with our infants all the way to our five-year-old students. And a lot of the emotional intelligence for our five-year-olds probably is like a two-year-old. Because again, either they were at home with their mom and dad for 2 years and there was a lot of screen time because we're just trying to cope. Our parents were trying to work at the same time. They had our kids with us in our homes. And then we put them back into school and they've either been used to being at home in that safe environment. And then we put them back in those childcare settings and it's totally different. Or it's, again, as adults, we've experienced trauma and we need to have those coping strategies and those skills. So leaning on each other in the classroom as teachers and then building on those strengths of those teachers too. But yes, definitely seen a shift. And I'm interested to see. So In Texas, we have something called Children's Learning Institute, and it's CLI out of Houston. And they are a research center that is now tracking and seeing what is the effect of these children who have gone through COVID, and they're doing a research study on them. So I'm so interested to see what that looks like. Now, it's
so
be
interested.
Too different. Like, for example, my daughter, who was born at the height of COVID, December 2020 was when she was born. And we were masked up. No one could come into the hospital. But for my family, COVID actually ended up being kind of a blessing because I got to spend that time with my daughter. And she was just with me for those 2 years for her life. And then we put her into school. And then she was able to, you know, blossom and have those social skills. But I have noticed that with adults, she doesn't really necessarily have that social interaction. She has a little bit of the selective mutism. So she kind of gets a little nervous around adults. She does great with kids, but why is that? Because maybe she was with me for so long. I mean, we just don't know those long-term effects. So I'm interested to see what CLI and what those other research centers are going to be able to show is that evidence for our little ones. And what does that look like? We also talk about with masks. If you think about the whole time they saw this, meaning we can't see our facial expressions. So we need to be overemphasizing our facial expressions for children. We need to show them what does excited look like? What does sad, mad feel like? Because for 2 years, those kids did not see anything from our facial expressions. So we really need to focus in on that emotional intelligence. And then again, showing them real pictures of different children in those emotions and not just using that clip art. Take pictures of the kids in your classroom, create a class book of class emotions and take pictures of all the kids in your room and use that as an authentic reading experience and writing experience for your kids. So really, really emphasizing that because we never know when we're going to go back to the mask mandate too. So it's just kind of interesting to see, you know, where we're going to be in the next 5 years too.
100%. And I really am looking forward to reading that study because I've spoken to so many teachers who are struggling because coming back out of COVID, yes, they have their own trauma that they're working through, but also classrooms are chaos. And I think part of it is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, like if you're teaching kindergarten right now, you almost have to run it as you would a preschool program. And we need to not lower, but change our expectations. Because if you're expecting a kindergartner who was, you know, dealing with COVID at the height of being 1, 2, those key developmental years, if you expect them to hit the same milestones and emotional social checklist that they would have, you know, 10 years ago, you're setting yourself and the child up for failure, essentially.
Absolutely. Yes. And that goes to when the kids first walk in the door, how are you greeting children? And are we really focusing on making sure children feel valued, feel like you care about them and love them? That's the first foundation is how does a child feel when they walk into your classroom? And I always give the analogy of, would you rather walk into a Target on a Tuesday or would you rather walk into a Ross on a Sunday in the shoe department when it's a hot mess, shoes are everywhere, nothing is, it's all mismatched, it's disorganized, it's dark, it's crazy, it's loud. And then I walk into a Target on a Tuesday, it's well lit, it's clean, it's organized, there's labels everywhere. I know exactly where to find things. So we think about when children walk into our classrooms, how are they feeling? Is it an organized classroom? Is it bright? Is it cheery? Is the child or teacher greeting them? So when we're setting up our learning environment, that needs to be one of the factors that we think about too, is the brain loves repetition and patterns. And so if it's chaotic and the stress hijacks that brain, a child is not going to be able to regulate. So we need to create the most calm, organized, most routine classroom so they know what to expect. And that goes back to your own home as well, which is hard to do with two. I have two under two. And it's tough to create that feeling, but making sure every time a child walks into your classroom, whether you're filing papers or you're putting things away, you make an effort to turn around, go towards that child, get down on their eye level, say hello to them. And there's a bunch of different resources that I'm happy to share of how do you want to be greeted? Do you want a high five? Do you want a hug? Do you want a fist pump? And then there's real pictures of different children and how they want to be greeted. And the child can just point to it. Because some kids Like my daughter, she's not a big hugger, but my son is. He loves those hugs. He needs that. Where my daughter will just want a high five or a wave or a hello. But you need to, again, get to know your child's likes and dislikes in every single child. If you don't know your child in your classroom's dog's name, I'm sorry, you're not a good teacher. You got to get to know what is that child's, what are their pets' names? What are their favorite hobbies? What are their mom and dad's names? So you can build those connections with children.
100%. It always, always comes back to that connection. And it's like a mini family, right? Because you spend so much time in your program that you are doing yourself as an educator a disservice by not getting to know your students.
Absolutely. And that goes into your circle time. So how does that look like in the mornings? And I know we briefly talked about last time when we spoke about singing songs with children and why songs are so important to children. Well, first of all, you're making those brain connections. And the more you sing, it's actually causing that brain to fire more rapidly. And they talk about that with infants and babies and why sing-songing your voice is so crucial to brain development for our kids. But that's not only just for babies, that's for our preschool students, that's for our elementary kids. Think of that song that gets stuck in your head over and over again. I go back to Taylor Swift because I just watched the Super Bowl, but
yeah,
those songs get stuck in your head, and that's not by coincidence because the brain loves repetition and rhyme. And that's the first way children start to read is reading those familiar books, those texts, those predictable texts, and those songs. So creating that family-like atmosphere during circle time, singing those circle time songs, and then ending the day with a circle time. So having some sort of closing circle where you're going to celebrate, hey, today we had such a wonderful day. Let's talk about all the great things that we learned. And end the day on a positive note, get them excited to come back tomorrow. Guess what? You're not going to want to miss because tomorrow we're going to, and then kind of leave them with that little cliffhanger. So we get them excited. And then you went back to creating that family community, creating a team building experience, whether that's Jenga and each child gets to put a piece on your Jenga in your circle time and you want to cheer them on, you can do it. Oh, we don't want it to tip. But if it does, that's okay. That's life. Sometimes a cookie crumbles. Sometimes things fall. And it's okay. We build each other back up. But when you embed those team building activities to circle time, whether it's your closing circle or whether it's your morning circle time, we're teaching compassion. We're teaching empathy. We're teaching friendship, kindness, all of those things that we know are crucial to those foundations of becoming an adult. You know, those adults that don't have those social skills, they did not get taught that as a preschool student. So 0 to 5 is those key years that we have to teach. Everything we do should be centered around social emotional learning. And it's crucial to that baby's brain so that when they get to be an adult, they're ready to work together. So many employers will say they can't work with others. And unfortunately, we're going towards the remote aspect. And a lot of us don't really have to work together in a workplace setting, but we know in life, that's not really going to be necessarily the thing. We got to work together. So let's teach those skills at an early age from birth to 5, because those are that critical time. 90% of the child's brain is developed by age 5. So we got to build those brain connections real quick.
Oh, yes. And you know what? Especially if we've got kindergartners, they missed key components. Like it has to be so intentional. It's no longer something that happens naturally. We have to deliberately set up situations. I hate to say it, but situations for conflict as much as situations for collaboration, because we are dealing with teenagers. Like I work with teenagers who struggle with conflict, who don't know how to take feedback, who don't know how to communicate to their, you know, like some of my students are dating and I'm like, okay, first of all, you guys are too young, but they don't know how to have a conversation with a partner. And then that continues into adulthood. If you don't know how to talk to somebody that you're dating or talk to a coworker or say to your boss, this is not okay, or this is what I need to be set up for success, even with remote. Like I think about, I've just received funding to have a bunch of university students and I'm so grateful, but I have 12 of them and we won't always be able to meet over Zoom, and they are really going to have to learn those communication skills and I'm going to have to step up on mine because we're going to be doing it remotely. But we have to communicate in order for us to be successful. And I'm so grateful I know how to do it. And most of them are educators or in school for education, but it has to be so intentional and at that forefront of our thoughts.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so many great resources pop into my head. Conscious Discipline is a fantastic positive guidance curriculum that really centers around brain development, talking about those I love you rituals with children and making those connections and how important physical touch is and how important if we are with someone to have that. And they talk about in your morning meetings, children need to be partnered up and they need to be turned and face each other because that teaches that eye contact. Oh, and then some sort of activity for them to actually physically touch each other. Because again, for so long, we were not able to do that. But it talks about when you're actually touched by someone, all of those firings of that brain are actually, and those endorphins and all of those chemicals fire in your brain and in your body because they're excited. They are happy to see them. And it talks about having, again, some sort of morning meeting that has those intentional team building, intentional partner, pair, share, all of those things that we know are going to be crucial when they do get to college, when they do get to high school. So hopefully we can build that. CASEL is another great positive guidance and discipline resource. It's CASEL, and they have lots of different platforms, even PBS Kids, I love. I just was looking at some of their, they have fantastic resources. They have a whole mindfulness, kindness curriculum that the University, I think, of Wisconsin created, and it is awesome. So there's so many things out there that we can be using. I think sometimes we just get bogged down in like our own curriculum, but that's also just knowing what are your state guidelines and what are your national guidelines. And if we don't know those, we don't really know what we should be teaching. So we're kind of shooting from the hip. So as teachers, we should be grounded in knowing our guidelines. What are they? I'm in Texas, and I will say the Texas pre-kindergarten guidelines are fantastic because they actually give educators specific instructional strategies of how to teach those social emotional learning standards. And they're going to give you activities to do. Same thing with parents. We have something called the infant, toddler, and three-year-old guidelines that are birth to three. And they also give parents and educators specific activities, not only in social emotional learning, but literacy, math. So how do I teach a two-year-old how to read? And introducing those letters and sounds, all of those are found in our infant toddler guidelines, as well as our Texas pre-kindergarten guidelines. So just knowing your guidelines, sharing those resources with parents too. A lot of times, even as an educator, I would go back when my child was six months old, and I was like, what do I do with a 6 month old baby? And I would have to go back to my guidelines and be like, okay, here's how I play a game. And this is the game I need to play with my baby, because you forget when your brain is stressed out, you don't think correctly. You can't think, you're in a fog. And so learning those curriculum standards are also going to be really important. And then labeling your classroom. And we can talk a whole lot about that, but creating that print-rich learning environment is going to be so helpful to your students, not only from pre-K, but kindergarten, first grade, and elementary. We should have so much print in our classrooms because that's going to help with classroom management. So when it's time to clean up, a lot of times I'll walk into a classroom and cleanup time's like 30 minutes long. The teachers are like, put it over here, put this over there, there. And I'm looking around going, I'm the adult and I don't even know where this box of Legos goes because there's no labels on any of your tubs or shelves. And so yes, it's going to be chaotic. There's going to be classroom management issues because kids are just like, we don't know what's happening. But if your classroom is well labeled, then children know exactly where those Lego boxes go. And then they're also learning letters and sounds, and they're making that association. So L is for Lego. L says L. And at 2 years old, they're like, huh, I don't know what that symbol is, but I think that means something. Print carries meaning. And so your little two-year-old and your infant are already learning letters and sounds because they're immersed in that. And then by the time they get to pre-K, they know 20 out of 26 letters because they've been exposed to it since birth. And yes. So creating that print-rich environment, what are the components of that high-quality learning environment? I go back to that CLI classroom environmental checklist. CLI Children's Learning Institute has created a simple checklist for teachers for infant, for toddler, for pre-K, and for kindergarten. And it tells teachers exactly what you should have in a high quality classroom. And it's a simple checklist that can be done 3 times a year. And it's going to tell you exactly what you need to have for your centers, for your read aloud supports. And first, you have to set up the learning environment. So that has to be your number one thing that you've created. And then that's going to help your teaching practices. That's going to help your classroom management. It's going to help with your positive guidance and discipline because the learning environment is set. But if we don't have that first, no teaching can occur. Just like if their social emotional isn't there, you can't teach letters and sounds yet.
Well, and that's just it. And we have something similar here in Toronto as well for the checklist. And I think most states and provinces do. And what I love about the checklist is it can still be transferred to play. Because as a play advocate, I hear curriculum and I kind of die a little bit inside sometimes, but remembering that any curriculum can be turned into play. And to your point of, you know, exposing infants to two-year-olds to print, it's not flashcards. It's exposure. It's conversation during play. And even having a visual schedule of how the day is going to look can make a world of difference in a toddler program, preschool program, kindergarten. It's night and day because those children are still operating at a high level of stress and so are educators. And knowing that next piece just, it brings that calm.
You are like hit the nail on the head with that one. I always talk about a horizontal daily schedule instead of vertical. Do it horizontally. So we're teaching book and print awareness. We're teaching the eye, we're training that eye to scan words from left to right.
Yes.
We're teaching that eye and training that brain. And then also when you have your special needs students, a child who gets anxious for a fire drill, I might have the symbol of a fire, of a alarm bell between literacy and math. And then tell my children, boys and girls, coming up today between math and science, remember, there's going to be a fire drill today. And that's going to cause that child to go, okay, I can do this. I'm prepared. Same thing for your ELL students, your English language learners who need those visuals as support. And then you think about that as an adult. If I'm speaking at a professional development conference and I don't tell them what time the conference is over, they're like, when is this lady done talking? Is she done at 10 a.m. or is she done at 11 a.m.? I want to go home. When is lunch? I'm hungry. I'm an adult. Well, children want to know that too. They want to know, when is my mom coming home? When is it lunchtime? When is it nap time? So many times children are like, it's chaotic because they don't know what's coming up, like you said. But if you have your horizontal daily schedule, you have an announcer for the day, and that could be a class job where the child gets to be the newscaster and tell what's coming up in the day and point to each of the things. And then the child knows, okay, only two more things and then it's lunchtime. Yes. Only one more activity and then it's nap. And then only two more and you get to go home and see mom and dad. Yay!
And it so really makes such a difference. Calming.
But if we don't have those visuals for children, then they don't know what's coming up and it's unpredictable. And that brain, again, loves predictability. So create that atmosphere for your children. And then you're going to be a better and more successful teacher in your classroom. And then that goes back to that book and print awareness, you're teaching letters and sounds. All of those good teaching practices are embedded just by using simple tools like a daily schedule and creating that horizontally versus the vertical.
Oh yeah. Routine is incredibly powerful because I think about, I have some tutoring students who are very flexible. I can say, hey, I've got a cancellation. Can we do earlier? But I know on Saturdays, I have one particular child. I cannot move his tutoring time. I have done it once. I will never do it again because I landed up with a totally different child on the other end of on the computer. Well, why are we tutoring? And I got so much attitude for the first 5 minutes. And I said, were you surprised that we moved the time? Yeah. Well, were you doing something nice? Like, were you doing something more fun? Well, yeah, I was playing Roblox. Okay. Well, now we're just going to finish earlier so you can play Roblox after. But what had happened was there was no warning leading up to it. It was, you've got Carla. And so suddenly the anxiety went through the roof, and anxiety can present in so many different ways. And unfortunately for this little boy, it presents with a really, really rude behavior.
Right.
And because I knew that what I had done, I had changed the schedule on him. I knew why, but sometimes we don't know why they're behaving like that. So children get labeled as rude, or I would never use this word, but bad, or, you know, misbehaving. And it's like, well, why?
And are we giving them opportunities for movement? You know, when we're sitting in a professional development as teachers, I always say when the bum is numb, so is your brain. So like, yes, let's get up, move our kids, get some oxygen flowing, take those deep breaths, and it's going to cause that brain to reset, be ready to learn. And getting kids up and moving, but also teaching them those breathing strategies and teaching them that mindfulness. I just watched a great little short clip of video on PBS Kids from a teacher that had breathing buddies. And she had little stuffed animals on the kids' bellies that they would lay down for her pre-K kids. And they would physically breathe up and down and watch the breathing buddy do that. But it also just centers them and it brings that mindfulness. And then it causes them to be calmer and causes them to have that that attention span so that they are ready to start actively participating and learning. And then like you mentioned, the hands-on activities. No child wants to just sit all day and do a worksheet. What are you actually trying to teach with that worksheet? Yes. What skill are we wanting to focus on? Can we create a hands-on learning opportunity? The same skill that we can teach, we can do instead of just tracing our letters. Let's get them up and moving. Take them out to the playground, write some letters on some plastic balls, throw them out there, and do a sprinkle sprint and have all the kids run and try to see if they can find all the different colors. Can you find the color red? Oh, good. What letter do you have on that? A, good. I just know real quick, is that child able to identify the letter? Yes or no? There's my quick informal assessment that I've done versus pulling a child aside. What letter is this? What sound does it make? I can do things by pushing into centers instead of pulling children to me as a preschool teacher. We need to be pushing into what they're doing. So if they're pretend and learn and they're playing, quote unquote, learning in their pretend and learn center, and I can say, hey, oh, what are you cooking over here? Oh, eggplant. Oh, what sound do you hear at the beginning of eggplant? Oh, what letter is that? So I can be focusing on skills. Oh, can you line them up? How many eggplants do you have? Let's count how many. I can real quick see, is the child able to rote count 1 to 5? If I take one away, can she add or subtract? So many things that I can assess and I can teach while children are playing. So I don't have to interrupt the play. I can actually push into the play. So thinking about that too, as an administrator, when teachers are just quote playing, well, what are you looking for as an administrator is what is happening. And oral language development is so crucial too for children from birth to 5. We want to build that child's scaffolding, having those back and forth conversations with children and elaborating on what they're saying is also helpful when you're pushing into those centers.
Yes. And it's so much deeper because I think about when I first started teaching and how we did, you know, worksheets, flashcards, rote count. We were theme-based. We'd pull the kids aside. What was interesting when I moved into tutoring from teaching, they couldn't transfer the skill. They could do it in a flashcard situation and a worksheet situation. But when we, you know, put it into a book or we put it into any other situation other than a two-dimensional piece of paper, they couldn't transfer the skill.
That's Whereas, interesting.
Right? And when you're having a conversation with a child, you really are giving them a 360-degree view of this skill, and it's transferable. Because yes, if you can count the eggplants here, you can count the rocks outside, you can actually apply this skill, yes, to real world, which essentially is the goal here.
Yes, absolutely. Creating those real life connections for children and building on their prior knowledge and then using that and using theme-based learning too in your centers. And are all the centers creating that theme? If I live in Dallas, Texas, most of my kids probably have never been to Antarctica. So if I'm going to create that experience of our Antarctica, I don't want all my kids maybe creating the same penguin. I always see that too. Everyone does the same blanket thing for art. We're all going to glue the penguin's beak right here. Well, is that truly meaningful for this child who lives in Dallas, Texas to know exactly where that penguin's nose is? No, but if I give them open-ended opportunities and I ask them, I give them creating that scene. Ooh, it's cold. What other kind of animals live here? How would you feel? What would you do? And we give them the open-ended questions, then that's also going to cause those higher level connections to occur in our learning centers too. So just creating that higher level and those real life connections is so crucial to those little babies too, that may never have the opportunity to experience other things, but thematic learning is so important for our little ones.
Yes, I always had like a science table because I'm very play-based, but when I started out, it was very themed. Like you could walk into my room and you knew exactly what it was because the dramatic center, the writing center, all of it was this one theme. But as I moved into play-based, I could switch it to the children's interests. And
Right.
then I would set it up as like a science exploration table. And it made such a difference because it would naturally move into other areas as their interest went deeper.
Exactly. No, I agree. That's key. And then giving him again the opportunity to have free choice. So choices is going to help. Instead of getting that struggle where that battle with a child, you're never going to win the power struggle with a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old.
No, you
But if
are
we give
not.
him two choices that we have made as the adult, then they feel like, oh, I get that choice. Do you want to go to science and math center, or would you like to go to pretend and learn center? And you get to choose where you want to go. So, and you go, I said this, or you were talking about this earlier. As a first year teacher, I was like, okay, I'm going to tell exactly where the kids go. They need to move. When I ding the bell, you may go to the next center. You
Yes.
three are here. And I'm thinking, going back to that, I'm like, that was not best practices. Like, no, children need to have autonomy and choice and feel like this is the one thing. Children don't get to make a lot of choices in their life. And if you think about that, especially as a 3-year-old, like, what choices do they truly get to make? Not a whole lot. But if I can give them this one little teeny tiny choice of where do you want to go play in my classroom? It's going to cause so much happiness for that child, joy of like, I actually have that control. Wow, I get to make those choices. Yes, you get to do that. And same thing when you're sitting on the rug, sit crisscross applesauce, hands in your lap, no one move, quiet, bubbles. Why? Why is that important? Ask them, do you want to sit like a mermaid today? Do you want to sit crisscross? Do you want to sit like a mountain? Do you want to stand in the back? I always have presentations and I always have at least 4 or 5 people in the back standing. Because
Yes.
they cannot sit still in a table and listen. That's okay. But also, how are we doing things? Are we audit word? How are we helping our kinesthetic learners, our audio auditory learners? Are we truly putting those things in our teaching practices? So, and it can go as simple as like, which water bottle do you want today, Blakely? Because we get into that power struggle all the time. Mommy, I want the purple or the pink or whatever. Okay,
Yep.
Blakely, here's your two choices. And then you can make that. And then we're ready to get in the car and move. Go to school. But if I sat there and said, no, you only can have this one, then I'm just causing more angst and more struggle with me as the teacher. So giving children that opportunity to choose and giving them choice is going to be so helpful in your own teaching practices and in your parenting.
Absolutely. And I know I've heard the argument from other educators that, you know, it means that we're letting the children rule the roost. Like we're giving them too much control. Well, what's wrong with them having control over their own lives and control over what they can control? I would love more control over, you know, my life. And I always go back to the psychologist Angus Campbell, who did a research in the 1930s on what made people happy. And he discovered that having control over one's time was a key indicator of happiness. And if me letting you choose the purple cup is going to make you happier, hells yes, take the purple cup, go live your best life.
Yes, exactly. And it's you can make the choice as the adult. So you are giving them two safe options as the adult. So you're not truly giving up our control as an educator or as a parent, but I'm making giving them easy, safe choices that I know are going to end up being so much more impactful for you and your child. So again, we're not truly giving up all the control because I am a control. I'm a type A mom. I like my schedule. I like to do my thing. I'm a
Me
teacher
too.
like that. I told you I was a bell dinger. I admit it. But in the end, if I'm giving children the opportunity to make choices that I, like I said, have created, then it's going to be so much more helpful for that child. And then again, as an adult, they're going to realize and create those safe choices for themselves too. But if we never give them the opportunity for choice, then who knows? You know those kids. You are well aware when those kids hit high school, those are the kids that are going to stay out till 2 a.m. They're going to be doing things that they shouldn't be doing because they never had control of their lives as a child. So give them the safe
Absolutely.
choices.
Oh, and I've seen it. Like, I've had the opportunity to work with children from preschool all the way to grade 12, like the same children. And I've seen from their friends, I've seen from them, you know, who, like, even decision making. I've had kids who, I don't know, you choose. Well, no, I'm not like, do you want to start with math or language? Like, it doesn't matter to me, but they struggle. And that's really going to affect them later when they decide to choose a career or a partner. Like, being complacent is no fun in life. Like, what a horrible way to live.
Right. It made me think about that, of the you choose. And I have had a lot of kids that cannot make a choice because they were never given the choice. Mm-hmm. And so if you give them more of that control, then again, as an adult, they're able to make those choices. But that's such a great point, Carla. Wow. I never thought about it like that, that those, and sometimes I was like that too, because my life was so controlled in a positive way. Thankfully, mm-hmm. my parents were very loving and very sweet, but my mom was a stay-at-home mom, micromanager. And so as an adult, I did struggle with that. Like, I just want to just make everyone happy. It's okay. But then in the end, I still as an adult struggle with saying, I feel frustrated, or I don't like that, or please don't do that to me, because I was a people pleaser. But giving kids language and giving them back that control is going to be so helpful when they become adults.
Absolutely. And like we said, right, 95% of your brain develops in those first 5 years. So there's so much, it's almost intimidating as an educator sometimes how much we have to do in those first 5 years. And you know what? We can't do it all, but mm-hmm. we can provide, you know, the scaffolding to do it. But it really is important that we take play in our environment and how we speak and discipline children so seriously, because it really does affect those teenagers and adults.
And that goes back to, I spoke on a different podcast of apologizing to children and telling them, as an adult, I make mistakes. As a teacher, I make mistakes. And then talking about, like, as an adult, I feel frustrated sometimes. Yeah. And so going in and saying, gosh, I'm so angry this morning. Someone, when I was driving, they cut me off. And then I had my big Starbucks coffee and I dumped it all over myself. And I'm so mad. What do I do? And then the kids are like, whoa, because she's usually happy-go-lucky every day. She's my happy teacher. Then nothing faces her. And what am I going to do? And it's okay to feel like this. And then my kids would always be like, go down to the calm down corner. Take deep breaths. Thank you. You're right. Let's go. And so as a class, we would all march over to the calm down corner. I would do my deep breathing and belly breathing. And then I would talk about it. Or if, as a parent, if I'm yelling at my child, which I'm not a perfect parent, I've yelled at Blakely before. I'm like, I have lost my cool. I'm sorry. But I always go back and apologize to my daughter. Blakely, I am so sorry. Mommy yelled and I was so upset, or I said something not nice to daddy. And I am sorry. You heard that. And I shouldn't have said that to dad. That was not nice. And giving him that, I'm not a perfect person, Blakely, and I am sorry for that. And I apologize to you, because a lot of times we like look at children where they're just kids, but they're not. They have so much more to give and they have so many more connections to make. So let's apologize to children. Let's tell them when we're feeling upset. And life isn't always butterflies and rainbows, which I want it to be for them, but it's okay. Sometimes life is tough, and give them those coping skills to help them become a better adult.
Well, and I can't help think that us apologizing to children is so much more powerful than us standing beside a child saying, say you're sorry, say you're sorry, you did something wrong, say you're sorry. And because it's not modeled, they struggle. And there's a great Instagram reel that's floating around of how much children watch. And it's somebody, they've got their in-home camera. And every time mom's vacuuming, dad lifts the carpet. And this happens multiple times. And then there's a video where mom's vacuuming and dad's not around, but the little boy, he could not have been older than 2, goes over and lifts the carpet for mom. And you just look at mom's face, like she's in complete awe and just like overwhelmed with emotion as to how important it was that her child like followed this. And the same little boy, they mimicked him. Dad would get mom a chair every time she sat on the floor with her son. And again, dad wasn't around and the little boy bought mom over a chair. And it's the modeling that we can do for children is way more powerful than anything we can say with our words.
Absolutely. No, that is such a great point. Like, again, children are always watching. And you know, if we are modeling, practice what you preach is what I always heard, is if you want to be a good person and you want your child to be a good person, then you need to internally, what am I not doing? What am I need to do better as an individual to grow and to model? How do relationships with others look? And I need to create those positive relationships with other people so that my daughter sees that. And my daughter is like, I'm worth it. I have my self-worth. I am, you know, an important person, so that she grows up and is like, okay, these are people who I should hang out with and talk about those things. But yeah, no, that's such modeling is huge. And especially in early childhood, but not only for elementary teachers too, and high school teachers. It's important. So I love, that's a great point. And I'm going to have to go back and look at that, because I have to show it to my husband too. Because like I said, sometimes I struggle with how I talk to my own husband or how I talk to my daughters, and it's tough. So as much as you can and model what you want your child or children to do is going to be crucial for your classroom.
Well, and think about as educators, how much the children rat their parents out to us. Like some of the things that we know that go on in people's homes, and we're like, oh, I don't think mom wants me to know that. And I laugh because it just shows how much the children are watching their parents. But then I bet you they also go home and model our behavior as educators.
Absolutely. My daughter is 3. And I hear exactly what her teacher does. Like when she's telling children to come up the stairs, like likes to pretend my son is 1.5, and she'll be like, okay, Vinny, walk quietly, you know, do this. And so she hears, and thankfully she has a fantastic teacher who is so loving and so kind and uses the best positively stated language, because she does it and she models it with him. And she even with her read alouds. Oh, that was great thinking, Vinny. And he's just sitting there, you know, I'm 1 year old. But so all of those little teaching strategies too, that she sees her teacher do, she's mimicking and doing that at home during play. And it's so sweet to hear. But that goes back to using that positively stated language. Instead of saying no hitting, no running, can you use your walking feet? Can you have helping hands in the classroom? Can you show me where these toys go? Give children clear expectations of what you want them to do. Be consistent. The 3 C's, clear expectations, constant reminders, and consistency is going to help with your child in the classroom and at home. But knowing that your child's going to come home, they're going to say things about you, and then vice versa at home and yes, at school. But I am lucky to have that in her life. She has some great examples.
Amazing. Well, and I honestly, like when I have conversations like this, I'm totally in agreeance. Yes, of course. But then there's always this guilt that sets in. So for anybody listening, if you're feeling guilty right now, it is okay. Because
we all do it.
Totally the teacher that yelled in her first few years. I have totally gotten in a kid's face and raised my voice. And I did apologize to that child, because it still sits on my heart that I'm like, I can't believe I did that. And thankfully, I was in an amazing school at the time. And this child and I were able to be together for 2 years in the classroom. And I was able to grow so much as a teacher, because this kid knew where every single button was for me. Let me tell you. But for anybody who, you know, has that kid in their class, it can get better by exactly that, is introducing that positive discipline. And don't feel guilty, because we all make those mistakes, but it's about moving forward.
Exactly. And, you know, we teach the little ones. So it's like, are they ever even going to remember these lessons I do? Are they ever going to remember even my name? Yes, they will. And I think I shared this on another podcast, but my first year teaching, I had that child. I had a really tough kid. Thankfully, he was so cute. I mean, I'm talking just chubby cheek, just had, he had these little switches where he would have a full blown meltdown, but then he could be the cutest, most loving, sweet kid. And as a first year teacher, I struggled. And I was like, gosh, am I even making any impact on him? Probably not. Like, this is kindergarten all year long. I was just like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. Fast forward 12 years go by, and we do a little reunion where we get to come back to our elementary campus, and the seniors that are graduating get to come back. Well, I taught at a school where it was a low-income school. We had a lot of children that were transient, where if the apartment lease would come up, they would move. And so I was like, I don't know how many kids I'm even going to see here. 2 children out of the entire grade of almost like 200 kids come back. And the first child to come back is my sweet little one, who I did not think would ever remember me, I would ever see again. And he was like, oh, Miss Head, I was not married at the time. Oh my gosh. And he gives me the biggest hug, and I just start crying. And he's like, you never gave up on me. And I was like, yes. And he said, this school just surrounded me by people who said, I am not going to give up on you. And he goes, really, truly, you teachers in this school were the reason I am who I am. I'm going to be a nurse. I'm going to nursing school. He said, my mom never gave up on me. She was a single mom. He said, she kept me in the same school district. She worked different jobs. We moved apartments. But my mom was like, no, I know how important these teachers are to your life. And I want you to be successful. And he is. And I was just so overwhelmed by emotion. And he's like, I know you don't think I remember, but I do. And I'm sorry. I was like, do not say sorry. I said, you had so many different circumstances in your life. You know, he was an African-American male raised by a single mom. He was from a low-income area. I mean, things are stacked against him, but he was going to make it. And I'm just so proud of him. So just know, teachers, that you may not ever get to see them again. And there's so many students I'll never see again, but I hope that I could have just made a little impact on their life in a positive way that they knew someone did love them. And I did appreciate them. And no matter what, as tough as they were, that person, that teacher truly cared about me as a person and made that connection, that bond with me. So just know, teachers, that kid will come back, or you might never see him again, but just know you are making an impact and touching so many lives of those babies that are tough, and you are making such a wonderful impact on them. So keep up the hard but important work that you're doing.
Oh, yes. And thank you for the goosebumps this morning. I feel like an emotional basket case. I'm like, okay, Carla, hold it together. But I know exactly what you mean. And it is such, I mean, what other job other than teaching and being in education can you make an impact like this other than nurses and doctors? Because we are just so fortunate. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. So much value to walk away with, to take back to our classrooms. I will make sure that all the links and everything that we talked about will be in the show notes below. But where is the best place for people to connect with you?
Thank you, Carla. Yes. So I'm on Instagram and TikTok at Building Brains Consulting. I'm also on Twitter. It's PK Sarah Scribbins. I would love to connect with you. I love shouting out all the amazing things teachers are doing. So tag me and I want to retweet all the amazing work, because you always learn through good teachers. I'm not a good teacher because I was just know what I knew. I am a good teacher because I watched great teaching. So thank you for all you do. I'd love to connect with you on social media at Building Brains Consulting or PK Sarah Scribbins. Thank you again for having me. This was a great conversation.
Thank you so much.